Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings, I'm Casey Luskin, and welcome to the ID the Future podcast. I'm broadcasting from Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. Right now we have on our show a second interview with Mr. Brendan Dixon, a software architect who recently helped program the new computer simulation Stylus.
Now, I understand that your Stylus program is open source and that you posted the source code on SourceForge. Can you explain to us a little bit about what is SourceForge and what can people find if they go to the Stylus page on SourceForge?
Oh, sure, absolutely. You know, one of the great things about the internet and where programming is at these days is it's very, very easy for developers of programs to share the program, not just in a what we call a binary form or an executable, something that you can download and run, much like you would if you went out and bought Microsoft Word or Office. But we can actually give away the code. We can actually give away exactly what we wrote that somebody can take and look at and evaluate. And that's exactly what Doug and I have done. And again, this is something we wanted to do from the very beginning. To share code like this, there's a number of places on the internet of varying popularity. SourceForge is a website, sourceforge.net, and it is arguably one of the most popular places for sharing open source code, code that others have written that like others to have access rights to and then look at and use. Our code is copyrighted, but we do that not to restrict what others can do with it, but in a sense to kind of protect the integrity of it. People are certainly free to go get the source, look at it, and change it, and publish their own version, I suppose, if they want, but then they'll have to write their own paper justifying these changes. When somebody goes to SourceForge, and the link is in the paper, what they will find at present is all the what we call the source files. This is what a programmer develops, the things that they write that actually become the program after run through a set of tools that compile it and produce what we call an executable. We did that because there are so many different systems used by researchers. It would have been very hard for us to produce a version for everybody. And so instead what we tried to do was to make everything available that we use to develop and build the system. We tried to give some clear instructions for here's what you do to download the code and to build it on your favorite system. And right now, we've actually successfully built and executed the program on a number of popular variants of Linux, including those from Red Hat and Debian. The software was developed on a Mac OS X machine, and it runs just fine there as well. We have not yet produced a version that will run on Windows. That is mostly because some of the libraries that Stylus relies on require some extra work to get them to work on Windows as well. So it can all be done. We just haven't gotten that far yet. We are considering putting up perhaps a small number of executables for some of the more popular platforms, but we just haven't gotten that far along, and we didn't want to hold the code back. I think the last thing I'd want to say about this is that we really wanted to share the code because we want people to be able to look at the code. It is well documented. It is clearly written. We want people to look at it. We want them to understand what we did. There's nothing hidden behind a screen. There's no magic tricks. We wanted to be very, very open about what we did, the decisions we made, and how we went about implementing the model described in the paper. And that was certainly a major reason for why we wanted to make this available, in addition to letting researchers download it and use it in whatever kind of experiments that they would like to be able to use it in.
And what have you done to make this program interesting to non-programmers? And I think I also want to ask the question, do you need to speak Chinese to use this program?
Well, I can assure you don't need to speak Chinese because I certainly don't speak Chinese. everything I learned about the Han characters that I learned in working with Doug is he and I both learned, actually, and tried to model what we could and what we learned about in the software. We did a couple. One of the blessings about Stylus, in a way, if you look at some of the other evolutionary programs and you download them and you build them and you run them, often they impress you with nothing more than a screen full of numbers, which you then have to go back and try to interpret and make sense of. one of the benefits of stylus in using something as visual as a Han character set is it's very easy to see what's going in. It's very easy to see what's going out. These are pictures. These are characters. You can look at them. You can look at the character that has been through 1,000, 2,000, half a million generations of evolution, and you can compare it against the original platonic, as it were, Han character. So that's a huge benefit. The package on SourceForge includes tools that make it very easy for a researcher knowing no Chinese, and really they don't have to know anything about the program either, to launch experiments and to view the output as a series of HTML, or think of them as web-based reports that can be viewed in most any modern browser, including Firefox 3, Safari 3, and IE 7. The other thing that we tried to do as well is that certainly if you're going to download this and run experiments, you want to be able to create experiments easily. And so we created we created a file format that's all text. It can be edited in even a notepad-like editor, anything simple. And it's got a simple, easy-to-understand structure that allows a researcher to specify the kind of experiment they'd like to run. And there's a number of options. The options are named with relatively readable English-like names, so you don't have to get a degree in anything strange to use this. And the last thing that we did included as part of the package is there's many, many thousands of characters or glyphs in the Han character set. Biologic has created genes for some of those that we're using internally for our own experiments and research. The package up at SourceForge includes a couple by way of example. But we also included a tool that's referenced in the paper called Inscribe that makes it very easy for someone to pick any Han character in the set that we support. They can trace it out. They can produce a gene from it. It's a visual interactive tool. It was written in Adobe Flash, and so it will run in most any web browser. They can, once they've created that gene, they can actually create variations of that gene very easily. They can squish it. They can deform it. They can reduce the number of bases in it. They can grow it. There's a whole lot of things that they can do. So we actually went to some pretty great pains to create a package and a system that is approachable by people who aren't geek and gearheads. We didn't want that. We wanted this to be something that was understood by biologists, people who understood the field we're trying to simulate. This is not supposed to be some complex piece of software that wows you with the magic that you don't understand. It's really supposed to be something that you can use, that you can look at, and that you can understand and make sense of and evaluate the results. I think the paper has some images of the kind of reports that are produced.
Yes.
And they're actually very, very rich. We show all kinds of things in the reports. They're very easy to work with.
Yes, it's very, very user-friendly from what it seems from some of the screenshots that you have in your paper. So one of my questions is, you have some figures in your paper that show attempts to apply random evolutionary mutations and various levels and degrees of natural selection to these characters. When you apply, an evolutionary simulation upon some of these Han characters, what happens? Are they recognizable? Do you evolve new characters in the Han character set that already exist? Do you tend to mess them up and make them illegible? What happens when you run Stylus, at least in your experience, on these characters?
Well, let's clarify one point with Stylus right at the moment. This is Stylus V1, and as with any V1 program, there's a bunch of things it can do, a lot of things that we'd like it to do that it doesn't do just yet, but are, kind of written into the program that we're looking forward to and hoping to get in there at some point in time. At present, Stylus is not designed to run experiments where you can say, how long would it take to evolve Han character 1 into Han character 2? What Stylus does well in version 1 is to say, given a single Han character, and given these constraints of fitness, given these constraints of size, given these other constraints, how does it fare under evolutionary pressure? Can I take a character that has been badly damaged, either knowingly or through some prior execution of Stylus, and can we actually evolve it into better shape? If we relax the constraints, what happens to characters? If we tighten down the restraints, what happens to characters? How long does it take for these things to happen? Are there patterns of mutations that tend to be more accepted than other patterns of mutations when you put pressure on a character and you force it to stay in good shape? Those are the kinds of questions right now that Stylus is very well designed to answer, and we hope to do more than that eventually, of course, because the model will support it, but there's only so many hours in a day to get the software written.
Well, let's
I was going to answer the last part of your question real quick.
Go ahead.
We have done many experiments, and we have found, so it comes as no surprise to anybody, that if you relax the constraints and just let evolution take its course, well, of course, the characters become very quickly illegible and meaningless. On the other hand, we've had characters where we set the constraint at a level that seems to preserve good readability, and the characters remain very readable over their life. And you also see in those cases the kinds of things that we would expect to see, that the genes tend to get hit on those regions that don't have a huge impact on the function, as it were, of the glyph. Areas that are critical for function tend to be preserved. Areas that are not critical for function tend to not be preserved. Those are the kinds of things that we've seen. But, you know, those, I'm going to call that all at the moment anecdotal, because we're in the midst of running more experiments, and we encourage others to run experiments as well.
Well, it sounds like you did answer the question I was going to ask, which is, what are your future plans? And it's great to hear that there are plans to actually go into more detailed tests of evolution using this program. This is very exciting work that you've done, Brendan Dixon, and really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about it today. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us about Stylus, or what your experience has been with it, or what your plans are for it?
Well, the only thing I would toss out and say is that, we can't let it become a free-for-all, because it is implementing a model that Biologic Institute has proudly tried to develop. There's a lot of work to be done with Stylus, and if there are developers or people that have a programming bent and some knowledge of C++, Python, and the languages that were used to develop Stylus, I would be interested in hearing from them, because, like I said, there's only so many hours of the day. I can only get so much done, and the people I'm working with can only get so much done, and we'd like to take this thing even farther forward. And if others want to contribute to that task and help us improve Stylus, I'm happy to have them on board.
Well, that's wonderful. The paper is titled Stylus, a System for Evolutionary Experimentation Based on a Protein-Proteome Model with Non-Arbitrary Functional Constraints. And it's published in PLOS One by Douglas Axe, Brendan Dixon, who we're speaking with today, and Philip Liu. You can go check out the paper and contact the authors if you want to get involved with this project. Thank you very much, Mr. Dixon, for being on the show with us.
Thank you again, Casey.
Well, this is Casey Luskin with the ID the Future podcast. Go check out the paper and learn about Stylus for yourself. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2008. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.